In a year that has been so improbable, the impossible has happened.
A shot on Elo. Good! The Bulls win it!
You know what time it is.
The most amazing, sensational, dramatic.
Oh, blocked by James! LeBron James with the rejection!
Holy cow! Oh my God! I don't believe it! It just continues!
This is Mitchmo.
And this is Dallin. It is 2020, Mitch.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, my friend. This is January 1st, the first day of the new decade. And what would be a better way to start off these next 10 years, Mitch, than with an episode of the Sports Hour, am I right?
That's right. You're starting it off the right way by clicking on this pod, giving it a listen, so.
Exactly. So we have the end of the NFL season wrapped up this last weekend, wild card weekend ahead of us this coming Saturday and Sunday. So we're going to take a look at that, give some predictions on the playoffs, and as well look at some of the head coach openings now that we've had a couple more additions to what we had in the regular season. We're going to look at kind of the coaching carousel as a whole and who we may want to see in certain places. So that's basically what we're going to cover today, right, Mitch?
Yeah, yeah. No, that's the extent of it. It's going to be all football today, dude. All football.
All football.
I mean, it's the best time of the year right now, you know? Playoff football.
Yes, I mean, and like MLB, like nothing really happening right now. NBA is, you know, still in the full swing of things, but nothing significant yet as far as that goes. Once we get closer, like All-Star Weekend gets a little more interesting in the NBA. But yes, NFL right now, Mitch. And let's start this off. Let's start with the coaching vacancies. How about that? Okay. You want to start there?
Well, yeah, but before we get started with the coaching stuff and we get into it, I need you to hit the sad music, Dallin. I can't believe I lost, Dallin.
I can.
I lost on a 2-point conversion play. I'm sitting here with my girlfriend. We're watching the game. And I'm explaining to her a bet. And I'm telling her, it literally comes down to this play. It comes down to this play. And I am expecting John Gruden to hold up the one finger and say, kick it, we're going to OT. But no. No, he goes for two. Because he's a dummy. And now I have to record an episode soaking wet.
Yes, you do, which I will take that up probably next time. But yes, for those who don't remember, we had a bet on the Raiders going 8-8. Mitch was pro 8-8 Raiders. I was not. The Raiders end the season at 7-9. So once again, I'm right. It feels great. It feels
dry. Right.
And, you know, what can you say?
You're barely right, though. Come on.
I stay winning in 2020.
Ugh, this is so ridiculous. I need to win something at some point, right?
Right.
Can you say something? Can you say something outrageous so I can win something? Come on now.
I mean, that's the thing, Mitch. I'm very careful about where I go out on a limb. You know, I feel 100% confident when I make a bet. So no, it's good. And like I said, I'll redeem your spin on the water.
I believe
probably next episode.
So. I believe that has to go up on the Twitter too. So
yes, it does. It does, and the Instagram as well. So
yep.
Yeah, so for those who don't already follow those, Instagram is at the Sports Hour Guys. Twitter is at Sports Hour Guys. So, Mitch, let's talk head coaching.
Yeah,
let's do it. Before the end of the regular season, there were already two vacancies. The first one in Washington with the Redskins, who departed from Jay Gruden midseason. The Carolina Panthers fired Ron Rivera a couple weeks before the season ended. And then after the season ends, Cleveland fires first-year head coach Freddie Kitchens, and the New York Giants fired Pat Shurmur. So now there are four vacancies, but let's talk about the one fill, Mitch, because the Washington Redskins were quick to fill the head coaching vacancy, and they filled it with former Panthers head coach Ron Rivera. What are your initial thoughts on this?
Well, they need a culture change, right? Big time. And getting rid of I keep saying Dan Snyder, but that's not his name. Bruce Allen.
Yes.
And then also with the firing of Jay Gruden earlier in the year, Bill Callahan, I guess, did his job and made sure that, you know, it just didn't totally fall apart.
Right.
But this is a good thing. And you know what? They're hiring a guy with character. I know you and I have talked about this on previous episodes, and we've talked about this off the air as well. This is a guy of high character. This is a great human being, good football guy. He's a proven winner that he can win. He's gotten to the big stage, has yet to win the big game. But I think that, you know, he's going to be in the right situation, or at least a situation that the Redskins really need, where they need a guy like Ron Rivera. Even if he doesn't win a whole lot there, I think just his presence will change the culture there and have a positive impact on that franchise.
Yeah, and this could be something that catapults them into a successful regime, you know, and maybe it doesn't happen under Ron Rivera, as you said. Maybe
right.
He's not the one that's winning, but maybe he changes the culture enough so that the next guy can propel them into a winning franchise. And that's what, they have been bad for so many years, and they've never been able to right the ship, and part of that is ownership. And we've seen that with a few franchises. The Cleveland Browns are another one of those teams where ownership has really held those franchises back from being successful. And Ron Rivera is hopefully a step in the right direction. He's going to bring in Jack Del Rio to be the defensive coordinator. That was already announced today. That's his first hire for the staff, which I like as well. And they're going to, those are veteran NFL presences in the locker room, those two guys. So that in and of itself is going to make this a very serious situation in Washington. And they have some young talent. I mean, Terry McLaurin was fantastic this year. Dwayne Haskins, they drafted him. They are probably invested in him. They're going to have to see what they can get out of him. With the second pick in the draft, they'll probably end up with Chase Young, which is incredible. So they have some good pieces here and there on this team to make some stuff work. It's going to be up to Rivera to kind of evaluate that talent and get the right guys in. But I'm a fan of Washington's hire of Rivera because it's the smart kind of hire, because they need to change things. And a first year guy, a Matt Rhule, isn't going to do that for you. You know, he needs to get put in a stable situation. One of these younger, guy without experience isn't going to be able to do that for you the way that Ron Rivera is. Rivera's 57 years old. And the list of guys that have won multiple Coach of the Year awards is pretty slim, and Ron Rivera is on it. So, like you said, he hasn't won the Super Bowl. He's been to one, but, like, he has had success, a measure of success. And I think he's going to be able to do well in Washington. I'm kind of bummed that I have to sort of root for Washington now, because I like, Riverboat Ron. I wanted to see him in Cleveland for the same reason, a guy that could change a culture, a guy that can, really move things around for a franchise. But smart hire by Washington, and they were on it. Like, they interviewed him on Tuesday with the intention of signing that deal, of getting it done.
Yeah, it was almost like it was a formality that he had
exactly.
to do
it was like, we're just going to sit down so we can, like, figure out the numbers, whose role is what, and they got that done on Wednesday, which is today, the day we're recording. So good stuff for Washington. Let's move on to Carolina, Mitch, where they've moved on from Rivera. There's quite a few names linked to them. Josh McDaniel, they have an interview already set up with Eric Bieniemy, which is the offensive coordinator for the Chiefs. They have interest in Matt Rhule. I think they're going to interview him later this week. Mike McCarthy has already met with them twice. What do you think of the list so far? What direction do you think they should go?
I mean, the first three guys are fine. But I for your sake, as a Panthers fan, I would really hope you don't get Mike McCarthy.
Yeah.
I mean, what we saw him do in Green Bay, obviously there was tensions between him and the quarterback. They had two different, thought processes on how things should get done. Uh-huh. We don't know what the quarterback situation is in Carolina right now. Is Cam Newton coming back? Or is he going to be playing somewhere else? Are they bringing in a rookie guy? Is I mean, you can even ask the question, is Will Grier going to be in the quarterback competition going into next year? You could even ask that question, I think. Mm-hmm. And so this one's weird. This one's tricky because it's weird to think about a non-Ron Rivera Carolina Panthers team.
It is. It's very.
So it's like I don't know who leads that team. I don't know who if they try to get a college guy to come in, and lead that team or not. They're already kind of, they've been led the last few years in kind of this very straight and narrow type situation with Ron Rivera. He's very much he's got a strict code of policies that they go by. Maybe a college guy might be a good guy to bring in, a guy like an Urban Meyer. But is Urban Meyer going to sign with a Carolina Panthers when he's got, you know, rumors linking him to the Dallas Cowboys? Probably right. Not. He's going to go with the bigger name franchise there. So this one's tricky. I don't know what direction they can go. I don't know if there's a really sound answer really right now with that situation.
Right. Well, and that's the thing. And they're doing their due diligence. The report's saying they're not in a rush to get a guy. They want to interview everybody. They want to do a very exhaustive search, which I appreciate, especially when you're replacing a guy who's been there for 8 years, like Ron Rivera has. You know, you got to take your time to find who's next.
Right.
But it seems to me that they want to change it up from what Rivera's done. I just don't think a guy like Mike McCarthy changes it up enough. It's still an old school mindset. And I know that he has said that he's basically took a year off to embrace analytics, but it's not the same. It's not the same as a guy like a Kevin Stefanski or a Bieniemy or even a Matt Rhule that's coming in with a progressive offensive mindset. Like, McCarthy's not going to do that. So if they're really trying to change the identity of this team, the direction of this team, then those are the guys they need to look for. I know Kevin Stefanski, who's the OC in Minnesota, is not on the list, but that is a guy I would really like to see. A young offensive mind who's had success. I want to see a guy like that. Bieniemy would be, I'd feel comfortable with that. They have such a good offensive weapon in Christian McCaffrey. They have so much potential with DJ Moore and Curtis Samuel on offense that I would love to see the right mind fit with those pieces and with the right quarterback. And that may be somebody in the draft, that may be a free agent, maybe Cam Newton, maybe somebody on the roster. I mean, that head coach is going to be able to choose what direction this team goes at the quarterback position, it seems to me.
Yeah, I mean, this is really a job that's like going to be very difficult for a first-time head coach to take. Because of the old system that they've had in the past. Like, this is a job that I see fitting for, you know, a Pat Shurmur to take. Because he's been a head coach before, because he's been around football a long time, and he has a, you know, this seems like a really tough job for a first time coach like a Matt Rhule or like a Stefanski or a Lincoln Riley to take when, like, there's already been a culture established there.
Yeah, see, I would disagree with you on that, Mitch, because they're in a position where they're not a terrible team.
Like, no,
I know this
no,
year wasn't
not...
great, but like they have a lot of good pieces, and that helps. Like, when you're a first-year head coach and you don't have to worry about culture because the last head coach has left a good culture, like a solid, everybody works hard, everybody cares culture, like, and you just get to step into that and expand upon that. Like, I think that's actually beneficial.
So do you think there's more patience or like less patience there than with like
a
head coach?
So, and that's going to be the question, is you're going to get compared to Ron Rivera. So right. I guess in that sense, it's more difficult, where like with Cleveland, any measure of success is going to make you look fantastic.
That's kind of what I was
Hugh
getting
Jackson.
At. Yeah.
Right. So I guess I can feel you on that. It just, I don't know, for me, of the remaining openings, and Dallas may well tomorrow become open, but for now it's not. So we're talking about Cleveland, Carolina, and the Giants. I think Carolina's in the best situation. I guess maybe Cleveland,
yeah.
But like at the very least, like in Carolina, there's functionality.
Well,
where in Cleveland may have
absolute...
more talent and more youth, but like they are a very dysfunctional franchise, and they fired so many head coaches. Like, what makes you think you're going to last more than a year?
Right. And in Carolina, you have an absolute superstar to build around. So, and honestly, I don't think Cleveland has that right now. As good as Odell Beckham Jr. is, we don't know if he's going to be there because he's, you know, apparently there's been rumors linked to that he doesn't, that he wants out there. Uh-huh. Baker Mayfield is nowhere near that superstar status. Jarvis Landry hasn't been in that superstar status, and there's rumors that he wants out too. So, but when you go to Carolina, you have a guy like Christian McCaffrey you could build around.
And exactly.
When you have a guy that can really make things happen even without a solid quarterback, you saw what he did with Kyle Allen this year. That makes things a lot easier personnel wise for a guy to take it. So yeah, I'm with you there. So
we're both thinking young, offensive minded coach. That's what I'm thinking for Carolina.
Yeah, I'd like to see Stefanski there. But you know, like you said, he's not on their radar right now. But
right for the time being, and who knows? And maybe you know,
maybe
that
a Matt
he
Rule
becomes
or...
a guy later. Maybe you know, it depends on how these guys kind of interview. But that's where I'm thinking. Let's head over to Cleveland real quick, talk about them because they brought in an offensive coach that worked well with their quarterback last year, and then Freddie Kitchens. But he was not a guy that could keep a winning culture around enough for them to do anything this year. So what is the move for Cleveland? They seem really interested in Josh McDaniels, like really interested. Is that a smart move or where should they be looking?
This is another tricky one. Josh McDaniels, I think would be a fine pick. We've seen the kind of rapport that he's built up with Tom Brady over the years. We know that he's good with quarterbacks. I really think that who needs to be brought in is a guy that can change a culture there because it's a pretty toxic culture over in Cleveland right now. And that was really their downfall this year was the toxic culture. And it started with week one when Odell Beckham wore that stupid watch out on the field. They have some prima donnas on that team.
Yeah.
And there needs to be someone with the leadership prowess to be able to come in and go like, no, we're going to do things my way. Here's the thing. Here's the way we're going to do things. We're going to do things the right way. I really wanted to see Ron Rivera in Cleveland. I thought that would have been a great fit. I also said Dallas, but you know, that one still is up in the air. But I don't know who's a great fit here. It might be a situation too with another young head coach, but I feel like bringing in a young guy in Cleveland, we're just kind of setting them up to fail. There seems to be too many problems culture wise to bring in a young guy. I think they need to bring someone in more established.
And that's where like Matt Rule from Baylor declined to interview for the Cleveland job, and he didn't decline the Giants and the Panthers, and so he's. Like, he's smart. He's like, you guys have fired every head coach you've had for the last 20 years after, like, a couple seasons. Why would I go there? Like, what assurances do I have that I'm going to stick around? You know, I think what makes the most sense is maybe a Josh McDaniels because he does have previous head coaching, experience.
Yeah. Unsuccessful, though. In
unsuccessful, but previous experience. They've asked permission for Greg Roman, for Brian DeBall, who's the Bills offensive coordinator, the Niners, DC Robert Sala, and then assistants Mike McDaniel and Mike LaFleur, the younger brother of Matt LaFleur. They've also been linked to Mike McCarthy, and that's the one, Mitch, that makes the most sense to me. Because he was able to build a really solid, consistent team in Green Bay, and he's an old school, maybe an older guy that would demand more respect. He's won Super Bowls, so maybe that's the kind of guy that you can bring in that brings your team to a more serious level.
Yeah, and you know what? Last time he had a mobile quarterback, that was Aaron Rodgers, and we saw what he was able to do with that. Very similar team build, I think. When he was in Green Bay last time, we saw him with Donald Driver and Greg Jennings. Now that's Odell Beckham and Jarvis Landry. He's got a mobile quarterback with a good arm. That would be Baker Mayfield, who needs a little bit of molding. You know, I think this is a guy with a ton of talent, but he still doesn't have the right tools to be a super successful NFL quarterback. And I think Mike McCarthy could get that job done for him.
Yeah.
By the way, Cleveland has not had a head coach longer than 2.5 seasons since the Haslam family took over the Browns in 2012.
Exactly.
So, yeah, it's
exactly.
It's like a minefield you're walking into. You don't know if it's going to blow up in your face one day or the next. So,
yeah, if I was any head coach, I would be extremely hesitant to go to Cleveland, which is sad because there's a lot of talent on this team and it should be a good team. But with the ownership and the history of losing, it's just it's a toxic place to put yourself.
Right.
You know,
what are the odds? What are the odds? Like a guy like Tom Coughlin gets talked out of retirement to come in.
Zero.
Like a kind of a, not a dictatorship. That's not the word I'm looking for, but.
You trying to incorporate fascism into the Cleveland Browns, Mitch?
Well, shit, you might as well. I mean, team's got no discipline, so.
It couldn't get worse than what it is.
But, you know, so maybe not Tom Coughlin, but a Tom Coughlin-esque type guy that, you know, that runs a tight ship, that, for lack of a better term.
Yeah, I just, in this day and age in the NFL, those guys just don't have jobs as head coaches. They just don't. It's a different NFL now. And that's fine, but you still have to find the balance there. You still have to have a guy that like earns respect, you know. A Sean McVay has the respect of his players, but he's not that old school kind of coach,
right?
You know, but he can but he's had success with that team. And so you know, again, it's just finding who that guy is with enough charisma and leadership to do it. So, and Freddie Kitchens obviously wasn't that guy. I don't know who it is. They're in a tough situation if they're even going to convince somebody to come be their head coach.
Let's just hope for the sake of Cleveland, if Jason Garrett is no longer in Dallas, that he doesn't come to Cleveland. I think that'd be worst case scenario for him.
Yeah, probably. All right, let's talk about the Giants real quick, Mitch. So far, it seems like the Giants have been focused on the Baylor head coach, Matt Rhule. They've also requested interviews with Josh McDaniels, Patriots special teams coach Joe Judge, Eric Bieniemy, as well as Chris Richard, the Cowboys defensive coordinator, who will interview tomorrow with the Giants. So they have a lot of similar names, but focused on the college QB. I don't know the college jump. That's a tough one. That's a tough one. I don't know how I feel about it. I'm sure Rhule, well, he's either going to be fine or is going to be great or is going to suck. I don't know how to feel either way. The Giants though are in a pretty good position with a quarterback who had, you know, really good moments, had a lot of big numbers, struggled with turnovers, but I don't think it was a bad season for Daniel Jones by any means. They still have Saquon. I mean, they have, at least offensively, some good pieces. The team is bad, though. So I don't know what direction they go, Mitch. What do you think?
I mean, they need to go offensive-minded here. I think if Lincoln Riley takes a job, New York would be a great place for him. Because you just spent a 6 overall pick on a quarterback. This would be another great place for Josh McDaniel to go to work with a young quarterback.
Right.
I don't see him hiring a defensive-minded guy because I honestly don't think that's their biggest need right now. They need to mold this young quarterback's mind right now.
And the offense in general around Saquon, around Daniel Jones, how does that work, you know?
It's a similar situation to Carolina where they have a superstar to build around, and that's Saquon. But they're a little bit different, in fact, in the fact that they have a quarterback that they also get to work with and build around. So
right, and they know who that quarterback is. Where in Carolina, you don't know. It could be anybody.
Exactly. If it's Kyle Allen next year, I'll be damned. Like I just
no team's building around Kyle Allen.
No,
but who's the future quarterback? There, you know, there you could decide that here. You have to like Daniel Jones, and that may be part of it too. Does the guy coming in like Daniel Jones?
Yeah, exactly. Because you don't just spend a 6 overall pick on a guy and not start him for at least a year and a half. So, until you figure out that you drafted an absolute bust. And, you know, we've seen that with Jamarcus Russell. We've seen that with Ryan
Leaf. Josh Rosen, you know.
Arizona
gets Cliff Kingsbury and they get Kyler because that's the pairing that makes sense, and they, you know, get rid of Rosen because that wasn't the guy that, you know, Cliff wanted.
But
this isn't the same situation as that, nor should the Giants move on from Daniel Jones yet.
No, I think Daniel Jones will be a good quarterback. I really do. I think that he needs the right guy at the helm, though, with him.
Yeah.
I think he needs a guy that's going to help guide him and develop into a good quarterback, which is, again, why I think a guy like Josh McDaniels would be a great fit here. He's from the, you know, he's coach of the Pacific North, or not the Pacific Northwest, sorry, the Northeast, for the last how many years has he been back in Foxborough? I can't even remember.
I'm not sure.
But he's worked with the GOAT. So getting a guy like him would be a fantastic addition, I think. I'm all on the Josh McDaniels to New York.
Yeah, so. I feel better about that than Matt Rhule. I don't know. I'm not I just don't know about the college coach making the leap to the NFL, especially a guy that hasn't had a ton of success. It's just a hard it's a gamble to me. It's a big gamble.
How do you feel about these young college coaches that literally are head coaches in college for 1 or 2 years, and then all of a sudden they have 1 year of success and everyone's saying they got to be in the NFL. They got to move on to the NFL.
Been around for a minute, but coaching at Baylor is pretty recent.
And so, Lincoln Riley's been been a huge topic of discussion.
Right.
And the guy hasn't been around all that long. What, 2 years? 2 or 3 years? I mean,
yeah,
nothing.
Yeah, what matters now in the NFL is these young offensive minds. That's what the Kyle Shanahans and the Sean McVays of the world have done to the NFL. Is
right,
now
but,
every team wants that young offensive mind that's going to change the game. And so that's why guys like Lincoln Riley, they're like, who cares about the experience? Like, he's smart on offense. Let's get him in the room. And we'll put, you know, adults around him and we'll make it work. You know, look at like in LA, you have Sean McVay, and then on the defense, you have Wade Phillips. Like, he's old as shit. But
well,
like,
Sean McVay wasn't a young college coach, right? He worked under John Gruden. He worked.
Right. No. He was an NFL guy. I get that.
And you look at Kyle Shanahan, and his dad is Mike Shanahan, a very old school dude.
And Kyle Shanahan was on the staffs in Washington and obviously in Atlanta. So I get that. It is different. But I'm saying it's about the young offensive mind. And because those guys have been snatched up in the NFL, you know, the Matt LaFleur, Zach Taylor hires, that's what that was last year, is the same ideas. So they're starting to look at college and say, who are the offensive minds in college right now? Lincoln Riley? Well, let's get that guy. Matt Rhule? Well, let's get that guy. I mean, that's what it's about now. And I'm not saying it's right or wrong. I'm not saying it's going to be successful or not, but that's the idea in NFL minds. It seems like is who's the progressive offensive mind. Let's get that guy in the building. And we'll figure the rest out. We'll get the right pieces around him. And I think like LA is a great example of it working. You know, McVay, a young offensive mind with little, you know, actual head coaching experience. But hey, let's bring him in. Let's put him around the right people, and you can have success that way.
I guess
Kyle Shanahan's the same way.
I mean, I guess my only gripe with bringing in college guys like this is we've seen it not work way more often than we've seen it work. And we saw it with Nick Saban, who's led a dynasty over there in Alabama. Didn't work with it when he went to Miami. I mean, he was on Belichick's staff in Cleveland in '95.
Right.
And it didn't work when he came to Miami after coaching LSU. We didn't see it work with Chip Kelly. We didn't see it work with Bobby Petrino. But I mean, Bobby Petrino, he's a garbage human being. But it works
sometimes. I mean, a Pete Carroll. That worked.
But Pete Carroll was an NFL guy before he was a college guy.
I mean, yes, but I mean, how much though? I mean,
he was a head coach at the NFL level before
Mitch, I mean, I agree with you. This is just what the NFL is doing. I'm not saying it's smart or right. I'm just saying this is what they're doing. And that's why these guys get looked at. But the thing with like a Lincoln Riley is he's never said he wants to go to the NFL. Matt Rhule told his players, listen, guys, I'm listening to interviews, but like I'm planning on being here in Baylor next year. So like even though the NFL is interested in these guys, it's not like they're trying to make the jump to the NFL. You know, Lincoln Riley could have had a coaching job the last 2 years, but
yeah,
obviously isn't interested. Would have a job this year if he wanted, but I mean, doesn't seem like he's interested still. So it's a weird situation. And I don't love the college hire either. I really don't.
No, it's really not my favorite. So. It's not my favorite.
But interesting stuff. The only other one that could open is the Cowboys meeting between Jason Garrett and Jerry Jones again tomorrow on Thursday to continue to figure this out. It just doesn't seem at this point that there's any reason that this is going to keep going. So why they haven't just fired him already, I don't know. But it just seems at this point you can't bring this guy back.
Well, and let's be honest, like his contract's up, so they don't really have to fire him. They just don't have to re-sign him.
Yeah, I think it's the 7th, correct? So like they just don't re-sign him by the 7th, and his contract expires, so they don't have to fire him.
Right.
And I think that's kind of what it seems like they're doing out of respect, which I appreciate that. You know, I appreciate that. You just tell him, hey, listen, we're just not going to extend the contract. It's all good. We appreciate your time, but we don't want to fire you. Like, that's fine.
I think he'd be – everyone's been critical of Jason Garrett. I think he'd
be – And rightfully so.
I think he'd be just fine as an OC or a quarterback's coach. I think he'd be just fine.
Oh, fantastic. I think he should be an OC, and I think he should be – you know, I think a team needs to swoop in on him and take advantage of that, because a guy with that much head coaching experience, like, and he's a good offensive mind. I mean, they've always had great offenses in Dallas underneath, you know, with him as the head coach. So he has value for sure. And Dallas would obviously be the most interesting head coaching vacancy if and when it becomes available. I mean, that's when you're looking at the Urban Meyers, the Lincoln Rileys potentially, and then who else? Like, if a Matt Rhule, like, doesn't want to go to the NFL, but, like, can he be convinced to go to the Cowboys? I mean, the Cowboys, that's a lot of cachet.
Right.
So there may be guys that previously unavailable who suddenly become available for Jerry Jones. So that will get interesting, and obviously when that happens, we'll talk about it. If or when.
Before we move off the coaches subject, because we had a lot of new head coach hires last year, right? Like first time head coaches, they're taking their first head coach job. Who's the most valuable, or who had the most impressive first year as a head coach for you?
Wait, sorry, say that again.
So
you're kind of cutting out on here, so it blocks out every like 10th word. But
okay, what I asked was of all the head coaches. Like, who had the most impressive first year for you?
Okay, that's easy. Oh, yeah, that's easy. It's Matt LaFleur. I mean, okay. Green Bay goes 13-3 and gets a first-round bye in the NFC, where you have the Saints and the Seahawks and the Vikings. Like, you got a first-round bye. It's super impressive. It's extremely impressive. And they've been doing it, again, you know, with a hodgepodge of cast, especially on the offensive side of the ball. I mean, who the hell knows? Aaron Rodgers doesn't even know who he's throwing the ball to every Sunday. You know, he doesn't know what guy's out there. He's throwing it to anybody. And, you know, like, it's, I mean, this is what's happened to them year after year. And it's still working. And LaFleur to improve, you know, upon what they had last year is huge. So he was extremely impressive to me. I thought Cliff Kingsbury did a pretty good job in Arizona, especially second half of the season. They really came on, you know, won some big games. Beat Seattle week 16. I mean, that's huge. Like, so I thought they did well. Obviously, Freddie Kitchens gets fired. Didn't really work well for him. And Cincinnati wasn't good either. But I thought, I think Matt LaFleur was the best one for me.
Okay. Because for me, I feel like that's the easy answer. And I'm going back to Brian Flores.
Yeah.
I mean, was the team good? No, they were 5-11. Right. But this team down the stretch wasn't that bad. He did it with absolutely zero quarterback help, zero running back help. They go into Foxborough in week 17 when the Patriots are playing for a first round bye, beat the Patriots. And to be able to, I mean, first 2 weeks of the year, this was looking like possibly the worst NFL team in history.
Ever. Like, ever. I mean, like, they were
This was looking like an absolutely atrocious team. And what Brian Flores did to galvanize the troops and say, hey, we can still go out there and win some games. And then go win some games with no quarterback, no run game. They trade Minkah Fitzpatrick early in the year. They trade away Kenyon Drake to Arizona. And then come back and beat the Patriots when they're fighting for a first-round bye in Foxborough. Yeah, that guy was incredible. What he did with so little, I mean, does it amount to much? No, it's a 5-11 season. But what he did with that small of weapons to work with, but that little amount of weapons to work with, was just nothing short of incredible. I give that rookie head coach of the year to Brian Flores based on what he did. I mean, Matt LaFleur is super impressive. I mean, Aaron Rodgers had no weapons. You obviously, like you said, the first round bye, the 13-3 record, winning a division that they weren't expected to win. Everyone, I think most people had Chicago winning that division.
Or even Minnesota.
Or Minnesota, yeah, Chicago or Minnesota. And he did a fantastic job. But what Brian Flores did with a very lackluster Miami roster, it was nothing short of impressive.
Yeah, I mean, Miami started the season 0-7.
Right.
And went 5-4 in their last 9 games, including 3 of 5 in their last 5 with wins over the Eagles and the Patriots, which is, by the way, folks, 2 playoff teams. And they lost to the Jets by 1 in that same time frame. So, I mean, that's impressive to end the season. And when you have, and not only, like, yes, it's a bad team, but you and I know that this is a team that had zero motivation. In fact, they were supposed to lose. The idea was to lose. They were openly tanking. They were terrible. And yet the fact that he was able to motivate players enough to win games when it didn't matter for the team at all. The team in fact, ownership probably wanted them to lose, but they won games anyways. They won tough games against playoff teams, including, like you said, the impressive Week 17 victory over the Patriots. I mean, the defending Super Bowl champion Patriots, like when they're playing their starters, like that's extremely impressive. And you're absolutely right. I mean, I've heard people say this, and I think there's a little bit of joke with it, but a part of seriousness that Brian Flores should be considered for Coach of the Year. I mean, and I don't think that's as ridiculous as it sounds.
Yeah.
You know, that he's 5-11, but like with what he was given, he did arguably the best job in the entire league. So I feel you on that, Mitch. I really do.
Yeah, I mean, it shows a lot of strong head coach qualities that you look for in a guy when he's able to take that sort of team and still get them rallied together to go, hey, look, we're 0-7, but hey, I think we can still go win some games. I really like that's really promising. I think if Miami does their work in the offseason, has a good draft, this is a team that I don't think contends for a playoff spot, but I think progressively gets better over the few years. If Miami's willing to be patient with Brian Flores, yeah, I think this is a team that's showing a lot of promise.
This is a team with 3 first-round picks in this year's draft, including the number 5 pick. So they can add a ton of talent. They can add a ton of talent through free agency because they have the cap space. I mean, I'm going to say this now, and I know this is extremely early, Mitch, but they should be like a 500 or better team next year.
Ooh.
With this foundation that they've built upon. I mean, if you can win 5 games with this roster, then you should be able to win 8 with next year's roster. And I don't even know who they're going to have. But I like with the amount of draft capital and money that they can spend, like this should be a team that could win 8 games.
And they should go get a quarterback and have him play behind Ryan Fitzpatrick. Seriously. Have him play behind Ryan Fitzpatrick. Because, yeah. Fitzpatrick does enough for you. What they should go do is go get a quarterback, go get a running back, and probably a defensive piece in that with that third pick in the first round. And build upon what they had 5-11. It feels weird to say like they need to build on a 5-11 record. Because 5-11 is not impressive by any means. But they need to build on the 5-11 record because it's going to be very beneficial for them.
Yes, and especially because we were talking about a team where after a couple of weeks it looked like they would win 0 games. So yes, 5-11 is impressive, and right. Yes, it is a foundation you could build upon. So
yeah.
All right, Mitch, let's move this over to Wild Card Weekend. So season's over. We got couple games, AFC games on Saturday, NFC games on Sunday. Mitch, let's start this off on Saturday. The first game, Buffalo with as the wild card team heading over to the AFC South champs. That's the Houston Texans. Mitch, what are you thinking on this game, these teams, and who do you think is going to win?
Man, I said it earlier this year. If there's a team I don't want to see in the wild card round, it's Buffalo. I don't want to see them. And Houston has kind of fallen off in the second half of the year. They got their way in. Man, I got to take Buffalo in this one. This is going to be a defense. Like, Buffalo should be able to shut this team down defensively. Absolutely shut them down. The question mark is, can they produce enough offensively? A lot like what the Bears were going into the postseason last year. We know the defense is great, but how far can the offense carry them? How far can Josh Allen carry them? Because Josh Allen's play is going to be monumental throughout this postseason. I like the Bills in this matchup, though.
Okay, yeah. You know, the Bills are an impressive 6-2 on the road this year. So right. they've been a very good road team. Vegas has the Texans favored by 3 as the home team, obviously. ESPN's Football Power Index, FPI, matchup predictor has Houston with a 69% chance to win the game as the home team. I'm going to go with Houston in this game, Mitch. I'm very impressed with Buffalo. I'm very impressed with Sean McDermott and the team that they've built. I think they have a lot of future success. I think this is a team that could potentially compete for the division next year with New England. But Houston is the better team. And I think what it comes down to me is Deshaun Watson. Because we've seen games where a good quarterback can just take over the game. There's nothing you can do. And in fact, seen it a couple times this weekend watching college football in the bowl games. Trevor Lawrence for Clemson just took over that Ohio State-Clemson game and won it. It was just on his pure talent. And I saw it today watching the Rose Bowl. Justin Herbert just took Oregon and won the game. He just took it upon himself to win because talented quarterbacks do that. And Josh Allen is not that type of quarterback, but Deshaun Watson is. And if Deshaun Watson decides to win this game, Houston is going to win this game. And there's just nothing that anyone's going to be able to do to stop it. That's how good he is. And I expect that kind of performance from him. So I'm going to go Houston at home. I still think it's close, but I think Deshaun Watson wins the game for Houston by just being the best player on the field.
Yeah. I'm a fan of the underdog. I'm a fan of the underdog.
And I feel that. And I love Buffalo. I really do. They've been a ton of fun this year.
But I don't feel like Buffalo's the underdog here. Based on the road record, based on the toughness of their defense, based on the recent struggles of Houston, I don't think that Buffalo's the underdog here. I think it'd be a rare road favorite right now to have Buffalo I mean, obviously Vegas doesn't see it that way when they make their lines, but if I were making it, I would put Buffalo as the favorite.
Okay. I mean, and Buffalo did lose 2 straight games going into this playoff matchup. So it's not like they're going in ton of momentum.
One against the Pats and, you know, not a pretty game against New York, but
right. So
a close one.
Yeah, but I mean, it should be a close game. I think that's a competitive matchup and a fun matchup too. By the way, you have Tre'Davious White guarding DeAndre Hopkins. That's fantastic. I mean, that's Goliath versus Goliath. That's what that is. It's great. So a lot of entertaining stuff out of this. That's going to be a very good game, Mitch. Let's talk about the other AFC game later that evening. It's the Tennessee Titans earning the wild card at 9-7. Taking on the AFC North champs, the New England Patriots, who, as we said, failed to get the first round bye after getting defeated by Miami at home. So now New England hosting the only home playoff game they will host this year if they even make it to the Super Bowl. This is the only home game they'll host. Do they get the victory in the wild card round and set up a matchup with the Kansas City Chiefs?
I'm calling upsets across the board in the AFC.
Wow, Mitch, you have Tennessee. Ugh.
Look, the leading rusher in the NFL, Derrick Henry. Ryan Tannehill has played absolutely fantastic. The Patriots looked pretty bad against Miami. And it just seems all lining up. I mean, last time the Patriots were in a wild card situation was, 2010? And they lost in that game. When you take them out of their element where they don't have a first round bye, the Patriots struggle. So give me the Titans. Give me the Titans in this one.
Okay. I think this will be a pretty close game. New England is not the same team. Tom Brady's not the same. He hasn't been this year. And this Tennessee team is rolling in hot, like red hot. And so there is an argument to be made about an upset, Mitch. But, like, fool me once, shame on you. But fool me for the 12th time, like, I think it's shame on me. And I just can't pick against the Patriots. Especially, like, when it comes to them playing the Chiefs or the Ravens. Like, that's a different story. But mm-hmm. a 9-7 team, while New England is at home. And, yes, I know they lost a home game last week to Miami. But, like, this is playoff football. This is win or go home. Home and field advantage is much different week 17 versus wild card weekend. So I'm still going to take New England. They're favored by 5 in the spread. FPI 73% chance to win. I'm going to take New England. I think maybe, you know, a couple scores, 10 points at the most. But I just can't pick against them, Mitch. I just can't. They'll figure out a way to win. Belichick is too smart to lose a game like this.
I do want to point out, though, Dallin, Bill Belichick's record versus his assistants. Nick Saban, 2-2. Al Groh, 2-0. Jim Schwartz, 0-1. Romeo Crennel, 0-1. Eric Mangini, 3-5. Josh McDaniels, 1-0. Bill O'Brien, 0-5. And Matt Patricia, 1-0. So, he hasn't played well against former assistants of his. Mike Vrabel, the head coach over there in Tennessee, not mm-hmm. only being one of his former assistants, but a former player of his. Another reason I think Tennessee might pull this one out, should pull this one out.
Yeah. All right. So you're picking wild cards in the AFC. I'm going with the favorites, Mitch. Let's go to the NFC, the first game, the morning game on Sunday. Minnesota getting the wild card at 10-6, visiting New Orleans 13-3, won the NFC South, missed out because of tiebreakers on the first round bye. So now, Mitch, they got to play on wild card weekend, and they are a good team, but they're also playing a good team in Minnesota. 10-6, not to be overlooked. Kirk Cousins had a fantastic season. Dalvin Cook was fantastic, and this is a very solid team. The spread is 7.5 for New Orleans. FPI has them a 63% chance to win the game. What do you think?
I got New Orleans in this one, man. I mean, look at what they did with Teddy Bridgewater earlier in the year. I mean, and then you get Drew Brees back, and Drew Brees has been pretty good. Just, this team's got too many weapons. It's too good. Minnesota's a very good team. But I cannot look away from New Orleans. I just cannot. Give me New Orleans in this one. Probably by 10 plus.
I agree with you. And Minnesota deserves respect here, and they are a solid team. But Minnesota deserves respect here. They are a solid team, but New Orleans could be the best team in the NFC. I mean, like, there's an argument to me. I mean, they're 13-3. They have the same record as the Niners and Green Bay, and they lost to both of those teams, which is why they fell where they fall. But, like, they lost to San Francisco by 2 points. So, I mean, like, they're right there. So, I expect New Orleans to win. I'd be shocked if they didn't. And it's going to set up a fantastic matchup, which would be New Orleans in Lambeau for the divisional round.
That'd be fantastic.
Stellar. That would just be Drew Brees and Aaron Rodgers. I mean, it almost doesn't get better than that.
Drew Brees, Aaron Rodgers, probably in the snow. I mean, give me that. Yeah. Give me that.
100%. All right, Mitch, let's talk about the other NFC game. This one is very intriguing.
Yes.
Very intriguing. You have the 9-7 Philadelphia Eagles winning the NFC East, and they host the game against the Seattle Seahawks, 11-5. Couldn't get it done. Barely, by like a centimeter, they couldn't get it done against San Francisco at home on Sunday Night Football, which leads them to the wild card. Traditionally, you would think, okay, Seattle 11-5, but they seem like they played better than that almost. The line for them, they're actually favored on the road in the wild card. They're favored by 1.5, though FPI, ESPN, has a 60% chance that Philly actually wins the game. So, opposing thoughts there, Mitch, what's going to happen here? I don't even know if I know. I don't know if I have a prediction.
It's going to be tough. It's going to be a true test of Carson Wentz. He's in a playoff situation now against a really good team at home.
Yeah, you're absolutely right about Wentz, Mitch, because as crazy as this seems, this is Wentz's first playoff game.
Yeah.
he has not played in a playoff game before. So, like, the Eagles have won the Super Bowl, and they made the playoffs last year, but Wentz hasn't played in one. So you're right. This is a big test. And
big
he's going against Russell Wilson, who was arguably the MVP for the first half of the season until Lamar Jackson just continued the historic pace. So he's got, on the other side, a Super Bowl champ in Russell Wilson, and he's going to have to prove himself with a depleted offensive line, a depleted wide receiver core, a depleted team in general. I mean, Zach Ertz ain't playing. It's going to be Dallas Goedert and J.J. Arcega-Whiteside. So,
Greg, hey, can't forget Greg Ward Jr., man. Can't forget Greg Ward.
Sure, that's a player they have. I know that. So that being said, Mitch, I'm going to take Philly at home.
Wow.
I'm going to take Philly at home for a couple reasons. One, I know the game was close against San Francisco. Division rivalry, they're at home. That's important. But their lack of run game is going to be really tough for Seattle to overcome. Really tough. Marshawn is not ready to just start carrying the load. And the other guy that they played on Sunday, because I don't remember his name because nobody knew who he was. No, not even Turbin. No, the other guy.
Oh.
There's another guy who was on like their practice squad. He was like the only one that knew their plays. So he got like 15 carries. Like that's where they're at. So they're depleted as well. The defense isn't quite the same. I know Russell Wilson's the X factor here, because much like the Deshaun Watson argument, if Russell Wilson just decides to win this game, like he by himself can win this game. Like he's that good. But the Eagles, I don't know. I think the home field advantage is going to help them. And I just worry about the Seahawks and the injuries and what they can do on offense. I also picked the Eagles to win the Super Bowl this year. So they have to at least get past the wild card weekend for me. So I'm going to go Eagles.
Yeah, I mean, you do have to stick to that, right? I mean, you're
glad
bought
they
into
the playoffs.
It.
I'm just glad they made the playoffs, man.
You're bought into it. But let's put some perspective here. They lost to Dallas last year in the wild card.
Okay? On the road.
On the road.
Yeah.
That was a good team, right? Dallas was a good team last year. The year before that, they beat Detroit. Then they lose to Atlanta. The year before that, Minnesota get the win on the road. Lose to Carolina on the road. Another really good team. Super Bowl team.
Right.
2016 Super Bowl team loss. So really what we have to go off of over the last few years is that they lost to the eventual Super Bowl winner. So things look like it's looking pretty good for you, Dallin. But I cannot deny Russell Wilson. We've said it multiple times here on this show. When this guy, like we doubt the Seahawks every year, and they somehow get it done. And I can't deny Seattle. I got to take them on the road. I'm taking the rare road favorite here. Gotta
That's fair.
Them.
And here's what I will say, Mitch. It's either going to be a close Philly win or a Seattle blowout.
It's gonna be 26-23 or 34-0.
Philly's not gonna blow out Seattle. So Philly's either gonna win tight or Seattle's gonna blow the Eagles out of the water. Like that's the only two scenarios in my head.
Right.
Like I guess Seattle could get a close win, but I mean, basically Seattle should win this game. I just think Philly's gonna do it, and I feel obligated to stick with my pick. But again, both teams are in injury riddled situations. I mean, really heavily affecting their team. And so Seattle was flat to the end of the season. And that's my worry with them. The Eagles won five straight to even make the playoffs. They were 5-7 and won four straight games to get in. I mean, the schedule was very easy. New York, the Giants twice, Washington, and then Dallas. But, you know, they did what they needed to do to get in. Seattle ended their last four games with only one win, that coming against the Carolina team by 6 points, and Carolina sucked. So, I think Seattle's the better team. Philly's going in with the most momentum here, and they're at home. So, it's going to be a tight game, and that'll be a really good one. That'll be a very good game.
I'm pulling for a Seahawks-Niners matchup. That'd be fantastic, too.
And that would be great. And if Seattle wins and New Orleans wins, and that would we would get a divisional matchup in San Francisco with the Seahawks on the road. And that, Mitch, I mean, that's just great. We need that. Yeah. We need that. The world needs that. I understand.
The world needs that.
Still going to pick Philly.
Okay. Well, I'm picking Seattle.
But there we go. All right, well, that's it for Wild Card Weekend. In the AFC, you have number one seed Ravens, number two seed Chiefs with the bye. In the NFC, you have number one seed San Francisco, number two seed Green Bay with the byes. This is fun, Mitch. This is a fun year because there's like five really good teams, in my opinion. Five really good teams.
The NFC is stacked.
Like, you have Baltimore, Kansas City, Green Bay, San Francisco, and New Orleans. Five, like, really good teams. And, like, any of them could win the Super Bowl, and I wouldn't be shocked.
Who's under more pressure this year in the playoffs? Is it Pat Mahomes or is it Lamar Jackson?
Oh, that's tough. I would say Lamar Jackson, because Mahomes was a couple plays away from beating New England last year. Arguably should have, because of some penalties, some refereeing, you know,
bad officiating. Yeah.
So, like, I don't think anyone blames. It wasn't like a collapse for Mahomes last year, and he had an MVP level year this year. Lamar Jackson just happened to go off, but like, Lamar Jackson doesn't exist. Mahomes may repeat as MVP, right? And that's with missing a couple games. So, like, Mahomes, I don't think there's a lot of pressure on him, but Lamar Jackson's now the talk of the town. He's going to be the MVP, and he was great at the end of last year, but the Chargers just shut him down in the playoffs, and he could do nothing. So he has to redeem that individual performance, and the whole world, their eyes are on him. He is the next best thing in the NFL. He's the Mahomes of this year. So he has the pressure to prove he is legit, and it's not just regular season. It's not just yardage. It's not just touchdowns. It's I can win games when they matter. And so to me, Lamar Jackson's under the most pressure.
Yeah, I have to agree with you, because I was thinking about that because of the loss last year to the Patriots, and, you know, Mahomes getting his redemption and everything. But I was awful critical about this time last year of Lamar Jackson. In fact, we had about a 20-minute conversation last year on Lamar Jackson.
Yeah, after that playoff game.
After that playoff game. This guy has a lot to prove for me. Can he get it done in a playoff situation? Last year, I know you came to his aid and said, well, you know, he's a young quarterback. You know, what do you really expect? Well, I expected him because he was a starting quarterback in the NFL to show some sort of production. Now we've seen a full year. We actually have a full year, an actual body of production, a body of work to base him off of. If he doesn't reach at least the conference championship game, at least he has to get past his divisional round for me. If he doesn't get there, I really start to doubt if this guy's actually clutch or not. And the clutch gene is obviously rare to come by, but you got to have it if you're going to be a successful NFL quarterback. So yeah, Lamar Jackson is definitely under more pressure for me.
Well, and that's what matters. And you look at like Mahomes last year, like the Chiefs were the team. Everybody was like, it's going to be Chiefs-Rams, and the Chiefs get to the conference championships and they play tough against New England and just can't get it past them. But hey, nobody blamed Patrick Mahomes for that. Like, no. We didn't look at Patrick Mahomes any different after losing to the Patriots. So if Lamar Jackson gets to the conference championship and he's taken on either the Chiefs or the Patriots in that game, which is who it would be, like, and he loses that game and it's close, like he doesn't look awful, like, then no one's going to feel any different about Lamar Jackson. You could be okay with it, but you're absolutely right. He has to get to the next round, no matter who he play, no matter whether it's Buffalo or Houston that they're playing next week. Like, he's got to beat them. And then, you know, and then, yeah, and then he's, as long as he has a solid performance in the conference championship, then we can respect that, and he doesn't lose any favor in the eyes of the NFL, in the eyes of fans,
oh,
I guess.
No, yeah, no, he doesn't. If he gets to the conference championship game and plays well enough, no, he doesn't. He gains a heck of a lot in my eyes, because yeah. I've been hard on the guy. So, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
No. So it'll be fun. Great. Some fun matchups this week. The wild card weekend is kind of the one where you may see a couple blowouts, because, you know, it's not quite the best teams. The divisional round is really when you're at the eight best teams. So it's tough sledding and, you know, great football. But we're going to see some really good matchups. Like Houston, Buffalo, I'm a big fan of. Seattle, Philly, I'm a huge fan of. Those are going to be some fun games to watch.
Definitely. Oh, yeah. No, Houston-Buffalo is going to be a fantastic game, I think. And you know what? And Tennessee-New England is going to be a great team, too. We've been really blessed with some good wild card games this week.
Yeah. Definitely. No, it's going to be a great slate of games, Mitch. So anything else before we wrap this up?
I got nothing, man. I got nothing.
All right. Well, a happy new year to you all. Thanks for listening. As always, more content coming to you. If you don't already follow the socials, do so. Instagram is at the Sports Hour Guys. Twitter at Sports Hour Guys. My Twitter is at Lil Thoint. And yeah, I think that's about it.
Yeah, make sure you guys get on Anchor too and leave us a video message so we can actually answer some questions here. I mean, have we gotten any at all, Dallin?
I don't believe we have.
Guys,
so,
get on there, man. Get
so
on there.
Feel free to send some insights, some questions, input, whatever it is. We wanna hear from you. We wanna use it.
Hey, even if you tell us we suck, that's the only way we can get better.
I would love a voice message that just said, "Hey, you guys suck." That'd be awesome.
I would love it. I'd play it. Make that guy famous. Make him famous, you know?
We would play it on here. So. All right, guys. We appreciate it. We'll catch you next week.
See ya.